You're listening to Henley Business Radio.
Welcome to Henley Business Radio. My name is John Foster Pedley, and at Henley Business Radio, we look at provocative, informative, entertaining, and educational topics, and we study them and talk about them in a way to make them come to life. And follow us on hashtag What's Trending. Today in studio, I'm very happy to welcome Raoul Dunel. Raoul wears a number of hats. He's the head of Blank Canvas International, which is a consultancy. He's also the founder and chair of the African Sustainable Development Association and runs the African Sustainability Summit. And I'm happy to say that Henley is a co-founder of that association. And welcome, Raoul.
Thank you very much, John, and it's great to be on your show.
We're talking about an interesting thing today around sustainability. But before we get into that, who's Raoul?
Raoul is an African and very proudly African. We believe that Africa is the continent of choice, or I certainly do. I know that I've got a very competent team and certainly also industry leaders that have got a very similar vision. And we have a burning passion for Africa, the continent, to make sure that we are globally competitive, globally active, and certainly that we are making a contribution in our time as part of being Africans here.
Sounds great, but I see you cunningly slip from who is Raoul to who is Raoul's business and his team. So where did you come from? What's your background?
Sure. I've grown up in Pretoria, and yeah, certainly my background is financial services. I've moved into project management and certainly moving into service delivery. So I think I've always been, say, focused on offering solutions to either clients or people. So what makes me tick is to help people and to certainly contribute in a meaningful way. That's really in my DNA.
But the sustainability thing's bigger than that, isn't it, or different from that? There must be something in you, some sort of passion, something that triggered you to commit yourself to the sustainability work. What happened there?
Sure. I think it's my interest in nature conservation. So I find a lot of inspiration from spending time in nature.
So you're a bush baby when you're growing up, were you?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was very fortunate to grow up right next to the Magalies Mountain. So learning a lot from nature and from animals in nature. And that really just inspires me. You know, I can see the bigger picture when I'm in nature. And specifically, I don't think there are many places like Africa where you can have very vast and unique experiences in nature. So that's really focused me initially around the environmental aspect of sustainability. But certainly sustainability is much broader than that. It also includes the whole CSI and the people elements.
Before we dive into a bit about what sustainability is, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what this sustainability conference is and what the association does.
So the Sustainability Summit is a very active network in sustainability. It's the largest African sustainability network. Our focus is really around four specific areas this year: agriculture and agricultural technology. We're focusing on digital technology. We have a keen focus on the circular economy.
What are we talking about when we say circular economy? What is this?
So circular is closed loop. So it's really thinking, instead of thinking cradle to grave, which means that you're starting something new and you are burying something when you're done with it, or you are wasting it.
So that's
like a straight line of a value chain. You're making it circular, which means that your traditional waste or final output of a value chain, like a cell phone, instead of wasting it, you can actually use it as an input into a new process. So that's circular economy thinking from a...
So as I understand that, so all your economic activities, all the activities in, even at the home, you think about how can I buy something, use it, take what's left over and reuse it. Is that right?
That is correct.
And that principle working in agriculture, in industry and in home. Is that
yes?
That sounds interesting. It sounds simple until you think about it. So what are the elements of the circular economy sort of activity?
Sure. I did say that circular economy thinking is new, and to a degree it is if you're coming out of the Industrial Revolution. But certainly I would say older generations, if you look at your grandparents, things weren't available in abundance. They were not drinking water out of plastic bottles on a daily basis. They were getting water in a responsible way, and certainly there wasn't a lot of waste in the process of just drinking water. I think there was always a culture of using things and keeping on using things, and if it breaks, you actually fix it, you know. And I think things have become too easy for us, you know, in terms of acquiring new things and then wasting things without being responsible for the outcome of that. And that's really what the circular economy drive globally is trying to address.
It's a much more sort of integrated way of thinking, but that must cost some money. We make profit in our organizations. Why would we be attracted to work in this circular economy way?
I think initially when you start thinking about the circular economy, it feels like it will be more expensive. And it might be in the short term to actually produce in a clean production way, using, let's say, renewable energy, using less water, and design your processes to eliminate waste. Mm. But in the medium to longer term, it's certainly the right way to go. So if you're putting up a new facility, you know, it's really just a new design brief that you're giving the engineering team to use best practice, which is really all about better business. If you're an existing business, you're quite right in saying, how do you frame the business case to be able to transition your business from a current operation to something that is better?
Why would I want to, Ralph? I mean, I'm on quarterly reviews. I'm a listed company. The stock market's looking at my profits. It's all short-term cyclicality. So why would I be encouraged to do that?
Because I think that the market...
And my directorial incentives are based on my short-term profits. I'm going to lose money as a director.
Sure.
Why should I?
The market, your demand is moving towards understanding where products come from.
Yeah.
So wanting to see full transparency, not just in terms of what is the product cost or what is the quality of the product, but also wanting to understand the full environmental and social footprint of that.
Are you sure about that?
Absolutely.
How would you provide evidence and let us know that that is really what people want to do, rather than it's some sort of wish fulfillment of a sustainability guru?
Sure. I think that there are different markets, and we need to segment markets. I think markets that are certainly at a survival level would be procuring bread without thinking too much about what's the content in the bread. And that is the current reality that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. But I would say the majority of, let's say, parents and people would want to know what is the quality of what they are buying, whether they're buying a hamburger or whether they're buying something from Woolworths. If more information is available about the product, you can make a better decision. So what's really happening is that the leading retailers are making more information available, because they certainly need to supply to the demand, and some of the demand is more educated and more demanding in saying, I want to know exactly whether this water that's been bottled, is it South African firstly? Has it been bottled close to where we are consuming it? I would like to understand the full footprint of this bottle. You know, how many people have been employed producing this bottle? Where is this going to go when I've used the water? Are we recycling it? Is it a closed-loop process, or is it something that's not responsible to engage in?
I don't want to play the devil's advocate, because it's kind of cheap. And anyway, there's a great quote, what you do with devil's advocates, you just tell them go to hell. But but it's true, though, isn't it, that the argument for sustainability is powerful but not short-term. It's hard to find a commercial and financial argument to support it. In the current way we think about finance and economies, people don't buy into sustainability. It's something for the future. It's something that's hard to grapple with. It's down the line. And it's very hard for people to buy into green arguments, because it's not immediate.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's one of the critical issues for the green movement. And I want to challenge it, because I don't think these things aren't working very well, if I'm really honest.
Can I take a good example? Yeah. The Global Sustainable Development Goals that's been set by global nations for 2030 is pointing us in the right direction, but to your point, it's too far out, which means we struggle to get traction. I think the focus of climate change being one of those sustainable development goals, saying how do we reduce the amount of emissions that we're contributing, because certainly it is contributing to global warming, etc. And the global collaboration around COP have got people more aware around sustainability as a notion, and it's got people more aware about the fact that you need to change things today to be able to influence the future. Again, building on that as a foundation, the critical thing is then to move the timeline back. If you want to alleviate poverty in its entirety by 2030, that's your measurement. And remember, you can measure where you are at the moment globally. You can measure whether you're moving the needle or not. And we can be frank with each other. In South Africa, we're not moving that needle fast enough. So in the current reality, when you leave your house, you know, there are guys recycling from dustbins. There are guys feeding themselves and their families from dustbins. So there's really a big focus in Africa around poverty and getting people economically active. And we are not succeeding that. So you can call it sustainability, or you can call it another focus perhaps. But essentially, we are dealing with real issues that needs to get focus. So how do we actually change things? The only way for me to change things is to really have collaboration around something that you understand. So if we're practical, government understands that more people needs to become economically active.
Right.
Government is creating an economic environment.
Yes.
And policy around entrepreneurship, and certainly through enterprise and supply development, are driving behavior of linking entrepreneurs and their solutions and value to the formal economy. And that drive is starting to really deliver value. But at the same time, you've got academia and research and new models that needs to be infused, new technology that needs to be infused. So you really need to bring
businesses.
You have businesses.
So you need to bring all of this, right?
You need to bring these different pieces of the puzzle together.
Now, I understand that. But why I'm questioning this so much is not that I'm against this in any way whatsoever. I'm totally for it. But I think that the discussion and the dialogue around it remains abstract and unconnected. It remains, sure, it works at a policy level, but you're going to need businesses and business peoples to resonate with this.
Correct.
And I think the language is not reaching them.
Okay.
And if business is the driver for this, how are you going to convince people who are going to make this work that this is worth doing, other with some emotional arguments where you start talking about their future, their legacy, and their children, but they've still got businesses to run which are working to different criteria. There's a transformation to be made. And my challenge to all this is, how do you get to that core bit so it's not more rhetoric, more white papers, more policy in the air?
Hmm. It's not easy to do it, but there are many people working on it. So I think a good example of that is Judge Mervyn King, that has firstly started the awareness around triple bottom line and certainly built it into corporate reporting. Mm-hmm. And again, yes, that's from a compliance perspective, but the compliance is a building block into something that is better, something that is more transparent. And the minute you start having visibility, either about something that you do well or something that you don't do well, it means that you can then start applying new thinking, innovation, new designs, and you can start seeing which are the things that are interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, when we work with corporate leaders are seeing the value of starting to move beyond compliance, not just reporting on what they're doing around energy, water, and waste, but really saying, we're using too much energy. It's costing us a lot of money, and at the same time, we are polluting the
environment. A great example of that, McDonald's.
Sure.
You might notice soon that the little arches are missing from the McDonald's napkins. By taking the arches off, that meant that the napkins could be printed thinner. That meant that they could get a whole bunch more napkins in each pallet, which meant they could put more pallets into a lorry for their transport. That's given an economic return for them.
John, you're mentioning a great case study of McDonald's reducing the environmental footprint and being more efficient, you know, in terms of the napkins that they're using for their clients. Understanding their value chain, you know, certain things are locally produced and then distributed nationally, and certain things are imported. So I think it's critical for any organization to look at, are we doing near sourcing around things that could actually be produced locally, so that you don't need to have a lot of logistics and a lot of transportation, and at the same time that you're truly making a positive contribution to the community where you have a restaurant, as an example. So instead of having napkins distributed nationally, you might have a new piece of technology, let's say 3D printer that uses raw material. You've got one or two people that are producing the napkins that are needed for the 10 restaurants in this region.
Right.
There are great shifts taking place, and again, technology and the thinking of empowering and buying local is actually bringing about those changes.
So thank you. I mean, I've been probing at some of the assumptions behind this, because I tend to feel that there's this rhetoric about green energy, sustainability, and a fairly right-on movement about it, which is correct, obviously, by any standards. But it's not having the impact it should do, partly because the language and the cases and the examples and the projects are not resonating sufficiently with the people, and the economic model is not sufficiently articulated. So let's move on to some of the projects and some of the things. What are the trends that are happening? What's going on in this area that people should know about?
We have spoken a lot about the sustainability trend, which is certainly trending. And we had the discussion earlier about, do we understand sustainability? It does mean different things to different people, and that's good, because at least there's a consciousness about the fact that we need to think differently about things.
For example, sustainability is one of those suitcase words that you open a suitcase marked sustainability and 100 different meanings jump out. We talk about sustainable business. It's a business that sustains its economic operation. And yet, another form of sustainable business is a business that's working to green criteria and triple bottom line. What are you meaning by it?
Yes. I think I mean exactly that. So it's really understanding
both. Or one?
Both.
Right.
So essentially, for a business to be sustainable, it needs to be economically active.
Right.
And it needs to provide quality goods or services to their customers in a sustainable and a resilient way, cost effectively as well. But not at the cost of the environment and not at the cost of community that might have a livelihood that is linked to your value chain. So it's really, again, back to triple bottom line. And in that way, sustainability, whether it's for a business or an individual or for an industry value chain or a government, has got the same definition. It's very similar to the innovation discussion. Innovation means different things to different people.
Right.
But essentially, innovation is about focusing your time and effort on something that does not necessarily have a known solution or a good solution. It needs new thinking, and it doesn't just need the new thinking. It needs to actually come up with new thinking that can be commercialized or applied for benefit. Then you've actually been innovative and you've been effective at what you're doing. So innovation, as an example, is maturing now globally to the level where companies and countries are promoting innovation standards. So our own SABS design, or not design institute, the SABS institute is busy with a project, and we're actively involved on it around an innovation standard. And similarly, the Proudly SA team working with the European Union is busy with a sustainable farming standard. So these standards are guiding people understanding around what is innovation, what is sustainability, and then again, how do you apply it for different industry value chains, and how do you apply it for your role in that value chain?
That a big picture again is we are suffering consequences of our historic actions, which are creating problems we don't understand how to deal with. Therefore, innovation and innovative thinking is needed to address those problems with new forms of thinking and delivery models we haven't, or solution models we haven't even thought about yet.
Absolutely.
So it's a creative process. At the same time, we don't want to replicate these problems where our environment's been destroyed and we're creating a legacy for our children we just hate that we're doing. So we've got to come to that in a different way. So the sustainability argument and the sustainability association is trying to get to the heart of that and provide solutions at work.
Correct.
Is that right?
So a very good example of where technology is unlocking solutions for Africa and certainly globally, if we come back to the food security element, if you need to produce food in the outside environment where things are dry and where you've got limited water, and you've got pesticides, you've got all kinds of things that you need to deal with as a farmer, and then you're still adding all the elements of logistics and getting it to a market, the hydroponics and aquaponics technology is actually step-changing that, where a local community with a small capital investment can become self-sustaining in terms of their own food production for many years, and then also start producing wider. So I think that's an example of where technology is playing a role at understanding we do not have enough water. We do not necessarily have a lot of land. I mean, you can be producing food in a building, as an example, using vertical farming technology.
And vertical farming technology means you build a skyscraper, which is a farm, fundamentally.
Means that, essentially, you're quite right. Mm. At the same time, it might mean buildings that are currently standing empty and that are not utilized in our city centers are getting reconfigured into becoming producers of fresh produce. And the captive market is around those buildings. So you do not need to be logistically providing things at a national level. You can produce at the source where it's actually
going to be consumed. So stop thinking of city centers as places where the finance institutions sit around, but take the decaying city centers and make them farming and agricultural areas, but in an urban environment.
Absolutely.
Great
idea. So the exciting part is that there's a number of these projects already taking place in our country. So what the African Sustainable Development Association with yourselves as partners there are trying to achieve is to take the lessons from these success stories and actually replicate it with the key stakeholders in industry. Because the key for us around innovation and sustainability is if there are known solutions, let us take these known solutions of things that work and replicate them and give everybody the benefit. If there are not known solutions or if there are things that are not working, let us apply ourselves in terms of innovation and actually come up with something new and then pilot it.
So what are the other trending issues you can think of around this area?
Mobile learning, I think, is a trend, and it's certainly something that we all should be leveraging. If we're saying that we've got a traditional business model as Africans, you know, where traditionally our people are not highly educated or skilled, or the majority of our workforce, we now have a very big young population that needs to be skilled, that needs to be economically active at a global level, and I believe that mobile learning will make a big contribution. Mm-hmm. Another good example is the cloud-based technology or the IoT technology, where you have the opportunity of collecting information on things that are relevant. So it might be relevant for the government, or it might be relevant for business or understanding your demand. But understanding the information, you can actually then start gearing your solutions to offering certainly value to
And to be far less wasteful, that's the other thing.
To be much less wasteful, yeah.
Okay.
Another one is eco-labeling. So it's really understanding that when you are buying something, you can actually scan a label, so you can have the full traceability of that product across the value chain. And the way to achieve it, yes, is through technology, but certainly also through virtual partnership and virtual collaboration.
Just dig into that a little bit. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So if there are 10 different companies involved mm-hmm. at producing, let's say, a meal, mm-hmm. you need to be able to track back where the raw material was actually produced, how was it transported, how was it then processed, and then how was it the meal prepared. So who's been involved, what were the environmental and economic impacts, and again, has the value been shared? Or is the farmer getting 10% and the retailer is getting a bigger share? So it's really all about shared value and all about transparency across the value chain, and it allows for a whole lot of efficiencies, you know, in terms of planning to the demand and then working together as a value chain to satisfy the demand, whether it's local or global.
Okay, Aldis, that's really interesting, and I've taken you from one direction to another direction, rather on purpose, because I would like for us to think about what's lying behind all this. Why aren't people getting on board with it sufficiently? And I don't think it's because of the technology. I think it's partly because of the language we're using and the way that people can resonate with it. So that's my what's trending, is getting a sense of meaning and engagement around sustainability. And I think people are getting on board with that. But what's your next what's trending?
I think thanks for that. If you're looking at Maslow, for example, if people are struggling with having food security and being safe and being housed and having access to the basic needs, it's very difficult to get people to think differently and to really even register the whole sustainability discussion.
And equally, if people are locked into consumerism and paying for school fees and paying off bonds and can't see the relevance in their lives of doing this, and they want to build their careers and make their lives better, then why should they do this? That's the other side of that. It's a middle-class dilemma as well as the poor dilemma.
You're right. It's all about saying what is going to be left for the next generation. Hmm. And I think even if you have a discussion with, I would say, the emerging economy that we are in, people understand things need to be left for the next generation.
Right.
And it's actually
starting to
build on that. Hmm. So at the same time, when things are cold, I'm going to most probably chop down that tree and use it because I've always used it and there's always been enough trees. So it's difficult explaining that the population growth and certainly the way that we are operating in economic activity is destroying the environment. So the impact that we have is just so dire that we do need to change. Now, again, one can easily look at which are the industries that needs to lead the change. And it's certainly the resources industry.
Right.
It's certainly the logistical industry. Mm-hmm. It's certainly the manufacturing industry. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to say that through policy making and global collaboration and insight and research, there's a general understanding that things needs to change, coming back to the circular economy thinking that we shared earlier.
Sure.
And again, through clean production, through incentives, through grants, through funding, through technology innovation, it's actually cost-effective and competitive to actually make those changes in your value chain. But again, coming back to the consumer, I think if you're doing it at a cost to the consumer would not necessarily adopt it.
Right.
It's a very small percentage of the consumer that would be paying extra to have visibility across the supply chain, to know that they're making a net positive contribution by buying the product. But at the same time, if you're comparing retailers against each other, if one retailer is starting to do it as a competitive advantage, offering additional information at the same cost versus other retailers, you know, your competition would actually just become the average. Mm. So if that average bar around available information becomes higher through the availability of technology enablement, more people will become interested in it and will be utilizing it and making a decision saying, I'm not going to buy this bottle of wine. It's been imported. I'd rather support a local farm that I know is producing wine in a sustainable way.
So that's challenging some of the basics of globalization and international trade, but maybe in a good way. We come to the end of the conversation. I think you talked about one more trend.
Yes, absolutely. I think something that's critical is the whole focus around entrepreneurship. Mm. In the country which we're all sharing. And again, you wanted to know earlier more about myself and about Blank Canvas. We are an entrepreneurial company, and we can say that it's not easy to be an entrepreneur in any country. Because again, there are barriers of entry, and there's aspects around compliance. And certainly for a business just to start up, you need to be financially sustainable. And then you start moving to saying, what is your broader impact around environmental, social, and your workforce, and your clients, and your suppliers, and so on. So essentially the aspect that we believe is trending, and it should be trending much more, is just this whole notion of saying, we need more entrepreneurs. We need entrepreneurs that are there, that are successful in their small right to scale.
But let's
because sometimes
that
it's easier to scale an entrepreneurial organization than to start a new one. Right. So I think the notion of entrepreneurship needs to get even more focus in our country. And the focus is really the change and the thinking in our youth that is needed. So instead
of just cut in there for a second. We talk about entrepreneurship needing to grow, but it comes at a cost of the large oligopolistic organizations we have, the big companies. They talk the need for entrepreneurship, but frankly, entrepreneurs will come up and destroy their value chains.
It could.
So we're looking at sustainable entrepreneurship, not just entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship as a movement that will continue, and a change of thinking of the way we approach economics and large company growth. So the acceptance of large companies maybe going out of business and new solutions coming in place. Is that right?
It is right.
But I hear a lot of doubt in your
If large corporates are continuing without recognizing entrepreneurship and digital disruption, their business models and value chains would potentially be disrupted, and there's a number of examples out there where that's taken place. And entrepreneurs that are disrupting global business sometimes are referred to as unicorns, so it's companies that are less than a year old.
If they make enough money.
But they are literally just disrupting the world as we know it.
And have a huge valuation after
that. After that. But that's not the majority of entrepreneurs. I think the majority of entrepreneurs would like to bring their passion of either a solution or a product into a formal market and make a contribution.
Right.
So many times the barriers of access to the formal markets are just too high for entrepreneurs to enter.
But created by some of the larger firms and by the current economic model, you have to admit that.
Absolutely, and also created by the consumer. So the consumer wants to know everything about where that tomato comes from before the consumer is having the tomato. So it's really challenging the whole value chain as it stands today and saying, we are prepared to engage entrepreneurs and understanding what they have got to offer. We're going to then assist them to be able to produce the same quality than a larger commercial farmers, for example, and then we're going to give them some technology enablement so that we can still have traceability, so we can still have food safety of what we are procuring from entrepreneurs. At the same time, entrepreneurs that are getting developed through enterprise and supply development are then allowing market access. They are then getting some capacity to scale, whether it's funding or whether it's technology assistance or even sometimes just coaching. So essentially the entrepreneurs are then not dependent on one organization, but they can then start supplying into the broader market.
And that creates
economic
growth. What you're saying is it's giving employment to people currently unemployed, is creating funds for those, creating more employment, therefore the economy grows. Therefore, we have a sense of not a win-lose situation where the big companies go out of business and for all their rhetoric may not be encouraging the small companies enough, but there's a sense of tolerance and sort of symbiosis between them.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
And that's what we're looking for. So as we get to the end, and I have to thank you very much for all the points, and this is a massive topic that we just grappled around the edges of. It strikes me that at the heart of all this is this huge dilemma between three things. One, the way we see the world as it is now and how deeply those habits are imbued in us. Secondly, the economic models of the large organizations who are looking more for short-term results in the stock market and incentives drive that. And thirdly, what lives in us as human beings wanting to have a better future for ourselves and our children and a future that is healthy and beautiful and has nature in it, that spares land and shares land. And so we are torn between those three dilemmas, struggling to find ways. So this is not going to be an easy path, is it?
It isn't an easy path, but it's a very exciting path. And the secret lies for us in three things. The first one is raising the awareness and the consciousness where it's needed. And that means with everybody, but doing it in such a way, to your point, that people can understand the message of sustainability and the relevance and what is in it for them and what do they need to do. So that's the first one. The second one is framing value or business cases for people to change. And then certainly the third one is working together at implementing the change. Because if we're not implementing the change, and if we keep grappling with other terminology or grappling and talking past each other but not implementing even exactly the value that we're seeing, mm-hmm, we're not achieving the objective. And the objective, to your point, is to be able to leave a better legacy than what we inherited. And again, many times people just look at the negative legacy that we inherited. And that also needs to be said. There's a lot of technology innovation. There's a lot of infrastructure that's been built by historic generations. You know, the fact that we can go into space was a vision by JFK at some point, but it's been achieved. Technology innovation has taken place. It's been funded. Good leaders have driven the project, and that's exactly what we need to be able to take sustainability
forward. And I think you
forth.
Put your finger on a critical point there. And the point is that we've got to frame the way we think of this differently. I think people are tired of being terrified and depressed into action, action that they can't get their heads around what they should do. But the space race was a vision, and sustainable futures and a decent world is a vision too. So let's build a positive view of sustainability. Let's build an energy and an optimism around it rather than a deep pessimism of what's going to happen if we don't get it right. Because this is a challenge for our children. But surely it's the biggest challenge that you and I can face as people in the world today who are bringing up families. So this is something we've got to take on board. So Rael Donnell, thank you so much. This is the beginning of a much longer conversation, I feel.
John, thank you very much. And I look forward to taking this journey forward with yourselves.
So from Henley Business Radio, I'm me, John Foster-Pedley, interviewing Rael Donnell, who's the head of the African Sustainability Association and the Sustainability Conference and Blank Canvas, talking about sustainability. Thank you very much, and follow us on hashtag What's Trending.
Do you want to be part of the conversation? Follow, comment, and message Henley Business School and Henley Business Radio on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn.